This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we are beginning our first Thursday of the month. This is June 2021. Gosh, that's amazing to think of. June 3rd, as you know, this is a time for us to connect through the power of the spiritual energy of awareness and to celebrate our connection with each other and with the beautiful animals on this earth and the whole web of life here. And I think it's very important that we cultivate a sangha. Sangha is the Buddhist word that means community, spiritual community. And the whole idea with the sangha is that this is the foundation, really, of spiritual awakening. That is, isolated individual human beings, we really don't have a lot of possibilities to awaken spiritually. And coming to Earth, we're met with all kinds of challenges. We're wounded in many ways, but we're also given many gifts to learn to be kind and loving and to understand more clearly our true nature. And so that's what we'll be talking about tonight, our true nature, not merely as a physical body, or with a collection of experiences and thoughts and feelings, and with the emotions that go with that of joy or fear or jealousy or whatever it is, but that there's an animating force that actually goes beyond the personality. So this is, I think, very important for us, especially during this time of this pandemic, because the whole idea here, from my point of view, the main metaphor that's being used and that we see all around us is the metaphor of the mask. And I remember years ago when I was studying Jungian psychology and spirituality and so forth in the ancient Greek traditions also, that the idea of the personality, which we identify with ourselves, typically our persona, is the old Greek word for mask. So it's really being brought up, I think, more and more. And I was just talking to someone a couple of days ago who's an expert in common law, and he's approaching the idea of liberation for human beings in the United States, especially, and in, I guess, the British countries through common law, that common law and constitutional law are based on the idea that what we are is a human being. And as a human being, we have inalienable rights, and these are protected in the Constitution, the freedom of our basic freedom of speech and religion and so forth. There are many statutes that have been passed in the meantime that in many ways limit those basic freedoms that we have as human beings. And those are oriented toward, and again, this word comes up, persons, that we are legal persons. And of course, we're trying to get legal personhood for animals as well. But the point he was making, which I thought was very interesting, is that as long as we identify with being a legal person, that's actually a fiction that's actually a slave, that we're actually, in a sense, born into slavery. We don't realize it if we identify with being a legal person. So instead of being a person, to be the being. And that brings us into a territory of what is a being. So, but the idea is that if we understand these things well, we're on much more solid ground, not only legally, actually, but also, what's more important, I think, really, ultimately, is spiritually and psychologically and emotionally, that we're not a person. Again, person coming from persona. Per in Greek means through, and sona means sound, right? We know that, sona. So that's literally the Greek word for a mask, was the persona. So the being that we are, we're born into this world, and we get indoctrinated by our society, which always happens for good or bad, whatever. It's just unavoidable. We learn a language, we learn a set of attitudes, And along with that, we accumulate our own identity. We identify with a certain image, right? This is, oh, that's, we see a picture of 20 people and we look at that and we're in it. And we say, oh, that's me. There I am. And there's Julie and there's Rick and whatever. So, you know, we identify with this, this image, which is our body. And we think, oh, there I am. That's me. We look in the mirror. We say hello, good morning to ourselves. And so the whole idea, I think, in the Buddhist tradition, and I think really in all authentic spiritual traditions, is don't just stop there, right? That's the persona. That's the mask. That's the image. That's what the, you know, Narcissus fell in love with, right? When he saw his reflection in the pool, he saw that. He saw himself in this. And he fell in love with the outer, with, that's the big mistake. We fall in love with the image. And we don't know what we truly are. And so the whole wound, the fundamental wound, is we don't know really what we are. I think what is better than who, because who seems to sort of assume a personal identity of some kind. Whereas the word what am I, opens it up a little bit broader beyond just the idea of a persona, a who. But however, you know, however you're comfortable with that. So so that's I think something that is really coming up so strongly now. We're being indoctrinated in many ways. We have all been indoctrinated in many ways from the time we're little kids to stay in a shallow relationship with ourselves and with others, to see ourselves as an image and try to have a good one, right? We want to have a good, pleasing personality that everyone will like, so we're popular, so we're well-loved, so we get a good job and get a good partner, and we work on that, right? We work on this projecting an image that will get us what we want. And but ultimately, you know, that's miserable because we're not being authentic, actually. So if everybody's only doing that, we have this sort of typical shallow consumerist society that ends up destroying the planet, and animals pay the big price for that. So we're now seeing that the unfoldment of that happening over many centuries and refining itself more and more and being manipulated with more and more sophistication by more and more powerful people who now have high technology capacities to know, to advertise to us exactly what we want as we browse through Facebook or whatever. We're all become individually targeted beings. And so, and now we're even being pushed beyond that to actually wear masks and to not see even the outer form. Another form, another mask is put on top of the mask, in a sense. So, I think I want to just congratulate all of you for not only being born at this, and choosing to, I really think on some level, being propelled to be on this planet at this really critical time. Huge, incredible, amazing, adventurous time we're in right now. This is unprecedented, completely off the charts what's happening. But also to being awake and aware enough to be questioning the official narrative on all these different levels, and especially the narrative of commodifying animals and ecosystems and people, but especially animals. That's where it really gets so deeply into our psyches, this idea of the persona, just seeing objects as things to be used, and ourself even being an object. So what I'd like to do is go ahead and go into a meditation, because that's the main thing here. These are just some background thoughts that I'm sharing, and feel free to ignore them, or if they're helpful in some way, or if they spur a little thinking and questioning on some level, that's great. I think the main idea here that I'm trying to point to is that when we come to this earth and we can hopefully contribute to a sangha in a meaningful way, to creating community that can help us unfold our spiritual potential. And so that's, in order to do that, you know, that's the goal, I think, in many ways, is to help create communities of sanity and kindness and caring and celebration and wisdom. To do that effectively, though, each one of us is called to do the inner work to heal the wounds that have been inflicted on us since we were born, and from the Buddhist point of view, since you know, probably many lifetimes. The good thing is we can each be, and we are each other's teachers. And that's the beautiful thing. We learn from each other. So we can be teachers for each other. I mean, to me, that's the most priceless, amazing realization. I really get that at a deep level. In a sense, everybody I meet, not only human beings, but animals, situations, all dharmas, beings, can be my teacher. And I can learn something. Even sometimes they say in the Buddhist tradition that, you know, someone who creates a very comfortable position for you and makes everything comfortable, that's the most dangerous thing. You're closer to hell. And when someone creates a situation that's uncomfortable, oh, that's actually something really to be grateful for, because now we have to actually learn, you know. So it's not exact. The idea is not to look for things in life necessarily that make our ego, our persona, comfortable and happy. necessarily. I mean, that can be, it's not necessarily bad, but I think we've all experienced that in relationships. Sometimes the most meaningful, wonderful, rich, enriching relationships are when the person doesn't just always, smooth our feathers continually. When we're actually being challenged in certain ways, it becomes a growth opportunity that could never happen anywhere else. I love how the Dalai Lama says, you know, he's very, in a way, he's a great saying. You know, he's a humble guy, I think, but he says, he's so glad that he was born as a monk, because he said, I'm just definitely not spiritually involved enough to actually be in a marriage relationship. So that's really difficult. The person, you know, so this idea of, you know, being in, you know, individual personal relationships where, we really are called and we have a mirror that's right there all the time is somewhat different. I've been a monk and I've lived in monasteries, and there's a certain beautiful freedom in the sense that, you know, you don't have that kind of intensity or sexuality and all that stuff going on. It's just meditation. Something beautiful about that, but there's also something to be said for the tremendous growth opportunities that we have in the lay world, in our relationships with each other, whatever they may be. So that idea of teaching. All right, so let's go ahead. I think I've talked long enough here on this. I wasn't planning on talking quite that long, but let's go ahead and have our meditation time. And I'm sorry again that I'm not able to accompany this to the piano like I normally do, but I just don't have the computer. Hopefully we'll be up and running again in a week or so. So that's the situation. I'm on this little iPad. I'd like to invite all of us now. Feel free, however you like, however you're comfortable with. I'm going to leave my camera on and my microphone on, obviously. But if you're more comfortable, I think it's maybe a little better. But whatever you want is fine. If you want to turn off your camera and microphone, I think it's good to have the microphones muted. Anyway, but well, this is the time for going within. So we'll have our short meditation here. And let's just begin by taking a moment to connect with our breathing and to connect with the basic feeling that lives at the core of our being, basic feeling of being present and being aware. And that at this moment, I give thanks for this awareness, for this opportunity to be aware, to function through this physical vehicle. Giving thanks for all the teachers in my life and for all of the teachings of all of the world traditions that help to illuminate the pathway to more clarity and wisdom, joy and freedom, and to the discovery of our true nature. Giving thanks that there is an eternal sangha, an eternal community of human beings. We can look back into the past and we can see that our ancestors, parents, grandparents, and spiritual teachers in the past have worked hard to try to create contexts of wisdom and freedom, of beauty, creativity, and to liberate human beings and animals. We go back hundreds of years or thousands of years even and see historical people with very evolved consciousness who are still today venerated for their wisdom. So we just let this sink into our being, the sense of gratitude for the infinite web of life and of human beings who are part of the community right now of our spiritual family, whatever that is, and those who have gone before us, giving thanks for their efforts. And also, let's just take a moment and give thanks for this beautiful earth. And imagine for just a minute a place that you feel especially drawn to, wherever that may be. May just be a spot in your backyard, if you have something like that, or a place where you grew up, in the forest or on a beach, by a stream, whatever it may be, a place in nature that you felt or had a sense of being connected to the beauty and harmony that pervades the whole living web of life here on this earth. And let's take a moment and give thanks for this magnificent abundance of life here on this earth, for all the birds flying in the skies, all of the fishes swimming in the waters, all of the animals running around on the surface of the land, and the forests and rivers and oceans and prairies and jungles and the Arctic regions, the deserts. This whole beautiful sphere of incredible complexity and beauty. And that we are here for just a few short decades in this form to learn and understand more deeply our purpose here, how we can contribute to the welfare of all the living beings here, how we can be part of creating a world of kindness and compassion. So we give thanks for this beautiful planet, and we give thanks for the entire cosmos, the setting of this jewel. While our physical brains are perhaps incapable of comprehending the vastness of space or the larger context, we know that at a deeper level, we are home here in this universe, that we are part of a benevolent unfolding of life, and that our own loving kindness and compassion come from our true nature of wanting the best for those around us and for our loved ones and for all living beings. So giving thanks for all the teachings and teachers and for this whole living web of life. And then finally giving thanks for the unique being that we are and for the purpose that we have in this lifetime. Take a moment and just feel into what we can get a sense of is our unique reason for being here. That we have unique talents and abilities and perspectives that we can share with others and that we can cultivate, that we have gifts to give that no one else can give, and that we're now in an opportunity to discover even more what our unique gifts are that we can share with the world. And to not only share those gifts, but to also support others in sharing their gifts. This is part of creating the Sangha, the community. And so we take a moment now, knowing that we have a unique opportunity every day to deepen our connection with these gifts and to share them and cultivate them, that what we are essentially is not merely a physical body, but perhaps can be pointed at as eternal consciousness that was never born and will never die. Let's take a moment and just, as we sit here in our physical body, be aware that in many ways, there is a light that is shining through every particle of the universe, and it is shining at the heart of the universe, and it is shining in every cell of our own being. And that this light, as it shines within our heart and in every cell in our body, is a light of wisdom and joy and abundance. And just take a moment and feel that light permeating every cell of the physical body, bringing healing and bringing truth, the truth of infinite life, into every cell of our physical body and into every manifestation of all of our affairs, everything we're engaged in the outer world. Know that the light of awareness and of wisdom that is our true nature, that connects us to the infinite source of all life, is flowing always right now through every cell in our body, through every thought and feeling that's coming up as we go through our day, and bringing greater wisdom and joy and freedom and clarity and creativity into all of our affairs and activities, so that we are fulfilling authentically our unique purpose on this earth. Let's just see that happening now. Let's take a moment and just feel and see a white light coming down through the top of our head. And this light is resonating with the light that's already permeating our body. And it, as this light flows down, we just see it washing away any old fears, any old limitations to our inner wisdom, washing away as it washes down through our entire head, through our brain, our eyes, our ears, our nose, our sinuses, our jaw, our teeth, every aspect of our head and down into our neck. And this light, as it washes down, is just beautifully cleansing and clearing and healing any obstacles to the functioning and the free flowing of joy and abundance and wisdom in our thoughts and in our awareness and in our senses. And it washes down through our shoulders, down through our upper arms, through our elbows, through our forearms and wrists, down into our hands, and streams out through the palms of our hands and through our fingertips, bringing life and healing and joy and abundance and strength. And as it flows down now through our upper torso, down through our lungs and heart, and down through all of our internal organs, our upper back and middle back, and down into the middle part of our torso, and then down into the lower abdomen. Again, just bringing healing down into the pelvic region, bringing joy and clarity, dissolving any old wounds in the pelvic region, and continuing to just flow down this light as we see it into our upper legs and down through our knees, to our lower legs, through our ankles, and down through our feet, and just streaming out through the soles of our feet and through all of our 10 toes. So we just feel our whole body now, physical body, as a stream of light. The light is streaming through us as loving awareness, as joy and creativity, as eternal life energy, that it's vivifying every cell in our body, and that this light is always in every cell of our being. It's our purpose manifesting for this lifetime, this precious human life. So just taking a moment to abide in the truth of our oneness with this light, which is our own life force, actually, which is not just the fundamental separate self, but our true nature. So just breathing that awareness into every cell of our being. And then finally, we take a moment now and radiate into our world for all others an awareness of the love that is our true nature, loving kindness and benevolence, the basic sense we have that's always shining in our heart, that other expressions of life around us, all living beings, that they be happy and at peace, that they be free and have all of the causes of happiness and peace and freedom and harmony. So this basic sense of love, let's just take a moment and breathe that in to our heart. Let it fill up our heart. And then as we exhale, just radiate a sense of love out into our world so that everyone around us is blessed by the love that flows through our heart. So people that we know closely, our friends, our family, people we don't know very well, just casual acquaintances, we send the same quality of completely enthusiastic love for them as well. And even people who may be challenging for us, like, oh my goodness, we send it to them too, just as strongly. That's the whole idea, withhold this love from no one. Just send it out like you're the sun. We're the suns, and we're just sending it to every being. And some beings perhaps are wounded more than others, but all, we send this love with every exhalation, just radiating loving kindness to all beings in all directions. And then, of course, sending this love, especially to the unique and beautiful being that we are, and to all the efforts and the unique situation that we are, sending this same sense of loving kindness to ourselves as well. So we're abiding now in our true home of love, loving kindness, and breathing and radiating this love into the world. So the whole world is filled with loving kindness, and continuing, just engendering this feeling of compassion now, of a sense of wishing that others are free from suffering. The causes of suffering, we know what that's like, and so we wish that others would be free from suffering. So this is a very high form of love, the yearning to act, to relieve the suffering of others. So compassion, now we engender in our heart is the yearning to act as best we can to help relieve the suffering of others in this world, to be the voice and the hands to bring compassion and empathy and relieve the suffering of other beings. So breathing and radiating compassion into the world. Again, sending to every being, excluding no one from the sphere of our kindness and compassion, and abiding in our true home of compassion. Seeing the whole earth bathed in the light of compassion, knowing that compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And then we move into joy. So allowing ourselves to relax into our true home of joy, the great joy that doesn't need any reasons at all in the outer world, the true joy of our being far, far, far transcends any cause in this stage we call the earth. Joy of being, of awareness, of being able to be kind and loving and knowing our unity with the source of all life. So just abiding in joy, connecting with that sense of joy that is a bubbling spring at the core of our being. And letting that joy just move into every cell of our being. And then from there, radiating joy, letting it just overflow from our heart, filling the whole earth with the truth of infinite joy. And sending this joy to every living being. The joy of being, we acknowledge it as the core of everyone. And finally, now we move to peace. With every inhalation engendering in our heart the feeling of inner peace and harmony, sense of serenity. And as we exhale, we allow this feeling of peace to radiate from our heart in ever-expanding spheres of light, filling the whole world with the truth of infinite, indestructible peace. This is always the fundamental reality. No matter what the outer appearances may be, underlying everything is the great peace of one life living through many manifestations. So we breathe deeply, knowing the truth that as our consciousness is filled with love and compassion and joy, gratitude, that we are at peace. The peace that nothing in the outer world can ever disturb, because we understand the deeper level of our true nature. So we're just breathing and radiating peace. Abiding in peace and seeing the whole earth now as a beautiful blue jewel bathed always in peace. And we send this out as not only an outer truth, but also as an inner truth. The core of every atom, of every molecule, of every cell. Joy, peace, love, freedom are the true realities. And harmony and wisdom keeps everything unified, no matter the outer appearances. So abiding in our true home, this is the four viharas, an old Sanskrit word means abode, our four aspects of our true home. Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, and Upeka, love, compassion, joy, and peace. And allow these as light to fill our consciousness. And we give thanks for the efforts of all of us on this call and for the efforts of all human beings who are sincerely working to uncover the truth of themselves and let that shine into the world, the benefit of all. Knowing that we are part of an awakening of human consciousness on this earth, that we're in a time when this awakening is accelerating and we can all contribute to that in our own unique ways. So we give thanks. Knowing this is so, and so it is. Thank you very much, everyone, again, for participating in the meditation. And I'm happy to perhaps read a little section from the Dhammapada. If that is the right thing to do next, I'm kind of open to ideas. I just, you know, before the call, I've been doing readings from the Dhammapada, and I was thinking, well, maybe, you know, maybe we'll do something else. But we started a meditation group here at our home, and we've been reading from the Dhammapada, and people really love it. You know, it's something about it that's very ancient wisdom. And it seems kind of sometimes a little bit harsh, but I think there's a lot of good wisdom in it. So unless anyone has a really strong question they want to pose, I think I'll go ahead and just read it. It's quite short. There's only a few verses. And then, of course, I'd like to have some time, if anyone has comments or questions, you can raise your hand. Again, I don't have my computer usual system, so I'm not sure if I can. I think I can tell if you raise your hand, though. So, all right, I'll just read this. This is from the chapter of the Dhammapada. That's chapter 11. It's called Old Age. This is something up for a lot of us right now. I mean, for me, my mother is 92, and she's teetering kind of on the edge. And I know we have quite a few friends who have either parents or are themselves, you know, all of us, I guess, are in many ways experiencing this. This is something, you know, when the Buddha, you remember when he was just a young, he was this young, strong, handsome prince, and he was completely unacquainted with any of the sufferings in the world. His father had basically just created an artificial kind of like a bubble around him his whole life. So he was just a young teenager. And as far as he knew, life was beautiful and abundant in the courtyard where he lived. But he had a feeling out beyond the gates of the palace, things might have been different. So the first time he had his charioteer, you know, take him out and disobeying his father's orders, who was the king, and he saw a sick person. He had never seen that in his whole life. He never, like, what the heck is that? That guy, what's wrong with him? Oh, that's a sick person. And he had never heard such a possibility. And then the second one, time he went out, he saw an old person. And he had never seen that. He said, what the heck is that? That gray-haired, kind of crippled old thing over there? Oh, that's old age. You know, that does that. Oh, and that really disturbed him too. I mean, that happens to everybody. We all got to go through that. Yeah, you know, that's everybody goes through that. And then the third time he went out, there was this dead man, a dead person. And I'm like, what the heck is that? And so the charioteer said, well, that's death. You know, I mean, that happens to everybody too. You can't avoid that either. Well, that was really disturbing. And so he was really shocked. Like, oh my gosh. So sickness, old age, and death, those are three things that are almost unavoidable. And I mean, for sure, old age and death seem to be. And then the fourth time he went out, there was what really he noticed was somebody just sitting in meditation. And he said, what's that guy? Who's that guy? What's that? Oh, he's, you know, that's a monk in meditation or a spiritual adept. And so he wanted to know more about that. So that's sort of the idea behind the archetypal story that set him off on his quest. But so this particular chapter is called Old Age. So this is it. It seems a little harsh, perhaps, but I'll just go ahead and read it and we can discuss a little bit. Why the laughter? Why the joy when flames are ever burning? Surrounded by darkness, shouldn't you search for light? Look at this beautiful body, a mass of sores propped up, full of illness, the object of many plans, with nothing stable or lasting. This body is worn out, so fragile, a nesting ground for disease. When life ends in death, this putrid body dissolves. What is the delight in seeing these dull white bones tossed away like white gourds in the autumn? This city is built of bones, plastered with blood and flesh, and filled with aging, death, conceit, and hypocrisy. Even the splendid chariots of the royalty wear out. So too does the body decay. But the Dharma of the virtuous does not decay, for it is upheld when the virtuous teach it to good people. The person of little learning grows old like an ox. The flesh increases, but insight does not. So that, then there's only a couple more here. So that whole thing, I can say it's pretty harsh. But the basic point here he's aiming at, I think, to try to point out is that if we are ultimately committed to identifying only with a physical body, we're in trouble. You know, there's an old Zen saying that getting born is like stepping out onto a boat and going off, you know, onto the ocean, and this boat is definitely going to sink. You know, So that's inevitable. So the idea is but the whole idea here is, underlying it is to look beyond just the physical level. Because then he says this, through many births, I have wandered on and on, searching for, but never finding the builder of this house. To be born again and again is suffering. House builder, you are seen. You will not build a house again. All the rafters are broken. The ridgepole destroyed. The mind gone to the unconstructed has reached the end of craving. Those who have neither lived the chaste life nor gained wealth in their youth waste away like frail herons in a lake devoid of fish. Those who have neither lived the chaste life nor gained wealth in their youth lie around like arrows misfired from a bow, lamenting the past. So I think, you know, to me, the especially powerful verse here is, house builder, you are seen. You will not build a house again. All the rafters are broken, the ridgepole destroyed. The mind gone to the unconstructed has reached the end of craving. This is sort of the one stanza in the Dhammapada where it's the great aha. The Buddha has his great aha. He's saying, you know, I've been searching for many, many lifetimes to find the builder of this house, the builder of this body, whatever it is, the being that keeps, you know, showing up here, what actually is the being? And so through deep meditation, through healing the wounds of delusion and so forth, there's this direct experience that can happen. And he's talking about that here. And so the ridgepole is broken. Like, in other words, the idea is that the delusion that keeps me thinking that I'm basically separate from everything around me and so forth, and I have to manipulate myself and manipulate other people to get what I want and keep away what I don't want, this endless struggle, which basically exploits nature, exploits animals, and has us exploiting each other. When we see through all that, we realize there's just one life living through all of us. This is what he calls the unconstructed. It's beyond actual words. We can't talk about it so well. But the idea is to just realize that ultimately, the challenge for us is with the delusion of being limited to being only this physical body, and to see that we are the life that makes this body possible. The sense of being separate, that's kind of the idea here. So I'll stop there with my talking about that particular chapter. It's the one following the one we did last month, which I thought was especially good last month for veganism. The title of that one was Violence and How When We Harm Others, It Always Comes Back to Us. This one focuses more on the temporality and the fleetingness of life. But I think the transiency of life. But there's something to remember, which he doesn't say here, which is that it is transiency that brings beauty. It's so beautiful, right? I mean, when we see flowers or a sunset or whatever, a rainbow, whatever, a little baby, whatever it is, it's beautiful. Why is it beautiful? Because it's transient. If the flowers are like plastic flowers, aren't that beautiful? Because they never... they're just always there, right? The sunset, if it was always a sunset, if it was always a rainbow, if it was always little kids never grew up, whatever, it wouldn't be that beautiful. It's just, we love and appreciate and find beauty in things because of the transiency. And the same thing is true of our own life. It's transient, so it's precious, it's beautiful. So the idea is to see transiency of this opportunity, see the beauty of it, and see it in others as well. And I think this is the main message here in this one of old age is, don't make the mistake of craving something, of trying to hold on to something that you can't hold on to, that's fleeting, that you can't hang on to a flower and make it stop, right there. And so the good old days, whatever they were, they're gone, right? In the future, I mean, we just have this moment. That's the basic idea. We have this moment. And the quality of our consciousness is the only thing that we really have control over. I cannot control what another person does. I cannot control what the government does, really. I mean, or whatever's going to happen. What I can control is the quality of my own consciousness. And we do that, I think, by working every day on that. And that's something they talk about it in some traditions, like in Christian traditions, they talk about it as being prayed up, right? They say you pray every morning for an hour, whatever it is. So then you go through the day and you're prayed up. In other words, then when someone says something insulting, you don't just get angry and yell and scream. You kind of like, oh yeah, that's okay. It's, you know, I feel my oneness with the divine love, and things don't. I don't get so disoriented. So that's the Christian, you know, way of saying what we're talking about here, or you know, the idea of if we do the four Viharas every morning for an hour, maybe when someone cuts us off in traffic or whatever, instead of just yelling at them in our mind, we say, well, you know, I understand they're in a hurry. It's okay. You know, it's nothing personal. So this is the basic idea, is to work on our consciousness, not just when we have a crisis, but when we don't, so that's why I really want to highly recommend taking time every morning or whenever in the day. I think morning's the best, at least it is for me, to cultivate meditative practice to lay the foundation for the rest of the day, and probably do it again in the evening is a good idea too. I mean, all the time, really, but the more the better. Okay, I'll stop here, and I'd like to just open it up to any thoughts anyone may have, or comments or questions you may have, because that's part of our time here, of course. So does anyone have anything you'd like to share in regards to anything I've been saying, or anything else?
Yeah.
Okay, yes, I see. Yeah, Billy.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Will. In what ways you mentioned we are living through unprecedented times. What are some of the things or events that are happening, or you think like kind of will happen, that separate this time period from other time periods?
Okay. Yeah, that's a good question. And I think what I'm talking about is the fact that we're seeing, I think, an unprecedented attack on our basic freedoms. So we've seen this, you know, in the past before. It's happened many times before. There's been tyrannical regimes have risen up, and people have found themselves with less freedom. And I think we're seeing it again, and perhaps to a greater degree. I mean, it's never been like global, really, like the entire planet pretty much happening at once. So my perception is that this is happening right now in a rollout, like an agenda rolling out. I don't think what we're seeing happening has to do with wanting people to be healthy, to be free from some kind of, virus. I think what's happening is it's an agenda to move wealth and control into the hands of a tiny elite. And so, again, this kind of thing has happened many times in the past. It's happened all over the place in Asia and Europe in ancient days. There's always people trying to consolidate power over other people. And so what I've been emphasizing is the importance of us not just giving in to and believing the official narratives that are coming through the mainstream media, but questioning those narratives and then doing the best we can to create, first of all, health for ourselves, right? But also health for our society. So to try to keep our freedoms, right? I mean, to do the best we can, not to just give them up, not to just say, okay, then I will allow my basic freedom of speech to be taken away, my basic freedom of assembly to be taken away, my basic freedom of travel to be taken away, my basic freedom of bodily autonomy to be taken away. I mean, all these freedoms are just being like taken away. So, and it's happening to everyone, and it's being done through a rollout of fear. I think more fear than we've ever seen, like, unleashed on the planet, probably on a planetary scale, because now we have, at least maybe since Atlantis, I mean, probably in Atlantis something similar happened. Or maybe it's happened many times before, I don't know, but it's happening again. Anyway, this is like planetary fear rollout. So, we're here, you know, we're here during this time. It's a challenge, I think. People that normally we could conduct our affairs with a modicum, at least an appearance of freedom. Now even that's being taken away. So I think that's what I mean by the unprecedented times. And I think the solution to this mainly is a spiritual one. It's spiritual and practical. And the main thing, I think, is that if we human beings are going to continue to insist on enslaving and exploiting and imprisoning and abusing millions, billions of animals on a systemic level, we are going to reap the same thing ourselves. And that's what I think we're seeing. That's what I mean. It's unprecedented. We're seeing that, in a sense, as the old saying goes, the chickens come home to roost. And now what we've been doing to cows and pigs and chickens, you know, and they have to go through it. I mean, think of that. You know, if I was born as a chicken, I would be born right into a absolute tyranny. I mean, a horrible tyranny of where my beak is chopped off and I'm slammed into a cage and I can't turn around and then I'm hung upside down and killed. I mean, for no reason, right? I mean, it's meaningless. You don't need to eat chicken flesh to be healthy. No human being needs to do that. So it's like this meaningless slaughter and torture and imprisonment of other living beings. And we've been sowing those seeds for thousands of years. So what right do we think we have to be, you know, free ourselves? So I think what's unprecedented is that we're really seeing now the results of our actions. And it's essential that we get the vegan message out to the world of radical inclusion and kindness and compassion for those who are at our mercy and to whom we're not showing any mercy. We do everything we're finding happening to us, we do to them. And they don't, their families are broken apart. They're forced medicated against their will. They're everything. So we're finding all these things. So that's it. It's a huge challenge to us. And, I'm hoping that we can see the cause and effect relationships of all of this as a species. I hope we can see it and change how we're living and have compassion for the animals and stop abusing them and ecosystems and for each other and stop being afraid of each other and work together to make a more vegan and by that I mean a more free world for everyone. Let the animals live their lives, and then we'll be we'll have a solid foundation to live our lives freely ourselves. So it's a multi-dimensional, unprecedented time, really. I think it's on every level. It's a lot happening. It's like a full-time job just trying to keep up to date with what's happening. There's so much unfolding all the time, and to try to figure out what's really going on behind the scenes is another whole challenge. That's why I'll just close by saying this. I think it's so important for us to really maintain a strong spiritual practice through all of this, because otherwise I think we'll get afraid ourselves, and that doesn't help anyone, because fear causes this contraction where we just either want to fight against other people or run away, or to realize that ultimately what we are is undamageable. We're here to learn and contribute whatever is happening. This is a sort of a collective karma probably that we're part of, and to contribute. And I think I do have a good feeling that there's an increase. I mean, I think a rapid increase in the number of people who are waking up and who are, in the sense of seeing the bigger picture. And so hopefully, we'll be able to emerge, and because the old way really wasn't working, you know. And, so I think something better will come out of this, hopefully. Oh, so thank you. That's a great question. Anyone else have a question or thought or comment or anything?
Okay. Well, I personally,
yes,
I think that the practice of meditation is absolutely essential to break down barriers, to improve your health, to relax. So much of illness and pain is caused by tension being blocked up in your body or energy being blocked up. And the act of meditating helps your whole body to relax and to be open so all the good energies can flow through you. And so healing can become be ongoing. But beyond all that, meditation is the best way to go if you're trying to have a breakthrough of some sort, if you're working on healing, if you're sending love to others, if you want to access your creativity, just virtually everything. So simply going in and following your breath in and following your breath out several times in a row and then letting your body float, just being open, feeling the light traveling through. You express it all so beautifully every satsang and everywhere that you go and everywhere that you are. But it's something that we can do. The practice of meditation is so simple, and often the simpler it is, the better. You know, sometimes we want to put words everywhere where words aren't really needed. We just can be, and we can let go of that gotta do list. Like we all have these gotta do this, gotta do that lists. But as you breathe and relax and let the light move and flow through your being, then that gotta do list gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and it drifts away, and all the good stuff comes to you, and your body relaxes and is open, and you can have tremendous breakthroughs, and you can gain courage. Like this work that we're doing as vegan advocates, it's a hard job. It's really a lot, and it's hard on our hearts. So it's very, very important that we spend this time, find the time to do the self-healing, the work at empowering ourselves, and the work at love, you know, because it really all boils down to that. Thank you.
Wow. Yes, so well said. And thank you, Julie, so much for saying that so beautifully. And I couldn't agree more. That's it. You know, it's the we're pretty much at our hour long time here, so I'll just wrap it up here. But the two things you emphasize that you know, there's different motivations for meditation, and one motivation for many people meditates for physical health, because it's true. I mean, when we, like you say, just spend a period of time, maybe 10 minutes or a half an hour or an hour, just watching our breath coming in and going, letting the gotta-do list go, just letting it go, and just allowing ourselves to be present, listening internally, just listening, and being, like you say, just being present without being somebody, you know, just being. We can develop a certain ability. It's a, you know, meditation is a practice. It's like anything. It's like if I want to be good at playing the piano, I've got to sit. I can't just say I'm going to sit down and play the piano without ever practicing, or become a great tennis player by reading a bunch of books. You know, can you imagine somebody, oh, I'm the best tennis player in the world. I've watched all the matches and I've read all the books. Right? How about getting a racket in your hand and going out and, you know, hitting the ball around? You know, and so that's the practice. So when we practice tennis, right, we're actually getting it into our body. So we're learning. It's the same thing with meditation. When we actually practice meditation, we learn at a cellular level another way of being, which is profoundly healing on the physical body. It can be. You know, I think it very often it is. I'm sure it's helped me enormously. And then there's, besides physical healing, there's psychological healing that can happen. Old wounds, we can get more clarity. They can begin to dissolve. We can begin to, in the Buddhist tradition, they talk about untying the knots, right? We're all knotted up, right? The knots are all tied. And, oh my gosh. So we gradually untie the knots. You have to untie them in the reverse order, kind of, you know, to get back to the early knots. And those are the hardest ones to untie. But meditation can really help us in untying the knots. And then there's people who meditate for the motivation of, like you say, creativity. intuition and getting new ideas and so forth, and then for spiritual clarity. So whatever your motivation is, and we're just not encouraged to do it in our society. We're encouraged just the opposite, to be always busy and in the, either doing something or sleeping, I guess. But, you know, we're really pressured in our society. We're not taught this basic thing. And I think meditation is probably one of the most, in a positive way, subversive things anyone can do. You know, it's subversive to a society based on violence. It's very subversive because we begin to feel and see our oneness with other expressions of life in a way that's palpable. It's an inner, it's like a, my old Zen teacher said, it's like an inner do-it-yourself kit. You know, we all have it, and we can do it ourselves. All right, so I really have to wrap it up here. Andy, go ahead. I see you've raised your hand, so but I'm sorry we're kind of close here to the end. Yeah,
there
go ahead.
There we go. I'll try to make it really, really quick. So you just mentioned, I think you mentioned that you thought people were waking up, and, you know, and I might have mentioned this to you before, and I've tried to send out emails. People are definitely open to learning and hearing more. And, you know, yet all of the people that are speaking up are like online, like Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s organization, Vaccines Revealed. I mean, so many, it's like thousands of people, Dr. Christiane Northrup, Dr. Andrew Kaufman, Dr. Rashid Buttar, all of these people are speaking up, and everything is online to the point that, you know, so all of us that already know what's going on, we sit there and watch them. They're preaching to the choir. How do we get people to go out in public? Like, I'm trying to get, because I'm in grocery stores every day, and when I pass out flyers, people are grateful and thankful now. They're like, because their only source of information is mainstream media or their doctors or families. So how can we get people, like, all of these people, like Children's Health Defense and all of these doctors, to just stop meeting online and just switch it to the public, like the grocery stores where all the masked people are, because people are ready. I don't know how to get, we just got to, you know, because it's not even healthy to just sit there and be online all the time. Anyway, that's my thing. What do you think?
Okay. Yeah, just briefly, I know, like I say, we're at the end of our time, but it's a good, perception I think you have. You know, doing things online, like we're doing even like right now, it has its advantages. I mean, we're, you know, we don't have to go driving off somewhere, and we're,
right,
we can see each other.
Oh, no,
and
I love
kind of connect
this.
And we can learn.
About
and
this.
So, yeah, yeah. No, I'm just saying, but doing things, but there's no substitute for being together physically, you know. And it was like a year ago, we had a wonderful, or a year and a half ago, I guess it was, World Peace Diet training. And we were all in, it was a retreat, it was a meditation retreat and a training. And we were all in a retreat center in Marin County in Northern California. And, you know, that's so much more enriching, I think, than to try to do the same thing as a Zoom kind of a thing. But so you're talking about, that, you know, the personal connection dimension. You're also talking about the fact that, you know, there's a lot of people who just who are kind of mind controlled by the television programming. I think the TV programming is really toxic. Unfortunately, it's, you know, the pharmaceutical industry pays for the, for that. So it's a lot of fear and misinformation. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that's maybe, since you see it so clearly, that's great for you to speak up about it, and maybe that's one of your unique gifts that you're bringing to the movement, is to try to move these people to do things that are more public, where anybody can go, you know. And so I think, like I saw, for example, they're having, you know, more and more of these large gatherings, you know, where you have, you know, lots of people showing up, like we have in the vegan movement. You know, it was all of us just talking to each other, and then we started having veg fests, you know, and veg fests are great. You know, you get a veg fest, and all these people, most of the people who come to veg fests eat animal foods. And so we're showing them how delicious it is, and all that kind of thing. So have public events that bring the vegan message to the public. We could have, you know, like you're talking about, have public events that bring alternative views about health to the public as well. So I'll just stop there. I think it's a great seed idea to help propel us maybe to another, you know, way of educating. But the most important thing is to get the vegan message out, I think, really, especially. And then the message of questioning the fear that we're being afraid of each other and being afraid of these microorganisms that we've been living with for millions of years. So, all right. So I'm going to, I guess, wrap it up here. And thank you all. I'll send you my love. And Madeline is right here and sending her love to you all as well, and appreciation. Really, that's the main thing. More than love is appreciation. Just really appreciating each and every one of you for the efforts that you're making, not only in the outer world, but I think in some ways even more importantly in the inner world, to try to embody what veganism is, which is loving kindness and radical inclusion and questioning the official narratives in our society. So thank you for those efforts. Even though you may not see it all the time in the outer world, the real revolution happens on the inner planes of being. You know, that's where it really happens. It's when we connect with our consciousness and we send out love. And never doubt that those efforts are lost. They're never lost. It all helps to raise the tide of awareness to a higher level. And as the old saying goes, when the tide rises, it lifts all the boats. Even so, it helps everyone, even though they may not realize it. So let's look forward to our next, we have a World Peace Diet Facilitator meeting for the World Peace Diet Facilitators on June 17th. Yeah. And in the meantime, hopefully my computer will be fixed and we'll be back with a piano again, so a little bit of music. So let's just close by saying our prayer circle prayer together three times. It goes, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Let's say that together three times. Thank you so much, and much love to all of you. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere.
Compassion
encircles the
earth
for all beings everywhere. Compassion encircles the
earth for all beings everywhere.
So we give thanks knowing this is so. Even though we're not synchronized because of the technology, we are synchronized on the where it really matters. So much love to all of you. Go forth and multiply the message. Keep shining the light that you are. And always feel free to stay in touch with me by email or however you like to do that. Thanks again. Much love. I'll try to get this recording up in the next few days.
Madeline.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Love.
Bye, Madeline.
Thank you. Thank you. Love. Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you, Will.
Thank
God
you.
Bless
Thank you.
Thank you so much.